Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Aaron Morgan.
And I'm Tom Lewis.
And we work for the farmer members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization.
This week, we are discussing marketing with Link Farms operator Juliette Orazetti, who previously ran a sheep grazing business within a vineyard in Niagara-on-the-Lake in Ontario.
Welcome, Juliette, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about Link Farm and the operation you ran in Ontario for several years before moving out east to Nova Scotia.
Yeah, so we started up Link Farm in 2015. We'd been in university and then decided we wanted to try farming rather than continuing on in academia. So we started out in 2015 with a flock of about 50 sheep, and then we added some pigs the next year, then we added some chickens, and then the next year we added some cattle. So in the end, we were supplying a lot of protein. It was all direct marketed. About 95% of it went straight to our customers, and our customer base was mostly between Niagara and Toronto, although we did have some people that came from further than that. And we distributed all through farmers markets initially, and then all through delivery in the end, with a real focus on grass-fed, regenerative agriculture, you know, all those buzzwords, sustainability. And we really were pushing it towards, you know, the foodie sort of customer base that we had developed.
So, Juliette, what piqued your interest? Why did you choose the direct-to-consumer sales model?
Well, to begin with, I mean, partly it was to do with, you know, just having finished university, we had a small budget to start with. And partly it was ideological, you know, we were quite optimistic and, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed back then. And we wanted to, you know, really get to know our customers and feed them and with the highest quality product we could. And so we wanted, you know, we wanted that connection with our customers. But yes, of course, we started with, you know, 50 sheep, and we started on, what was it, 60 acres. And of course, you need cash flow. So getting the maximum income from a small land base and small number of animals was really important to begin with. And of course, it also gave us the opportunity to educate our customers, you know, to help them to understand why supporting us was a good idea and an important idea. And not just us, but other farmers like us or other farmers in the area.
So for those looking to get into this type of sales model, you've kind of talked about how did you get started, but maybe can you build on that or any recommendations?
Sure, yeah. So farming for me had started out as a summer job when I was in university. I was looking after this flock of sheep and got hooked. So that's really how I got into farming to begin with. We're not quite first generation farmers, but it skipped a generation, both for Martin and myself, in our families. So summer job was a great way to get, you know, a bit of a practical knowledge base. And then the farmers markets really were important for getting to know our customers and getting them to know us and to understand what we were doing. And then, of course, you know, that only goes so far. Social media is invaluable, as I think everyone understands these days. But you can't just expect people to, you know, look at these pretty pictures or interesting facts and be committed to you just that there. So an email newsletter is probably the most important thing for anyone that wants to be direct marketing. You know, you can lose your Facebook page, you can lose your Instagram account for a number of reasons, and you can't control exactly who sees your media there. But with an email list, you always have that list of customers. You'll never lose them, unless of course you piss them off. But that's super important. And then restaurants and word of mouth, they sort of go hand in hand. We sold whole animals to restaurants who shared our, you know, our ethos and whose customers in theory would be good customers of ours as well. And when you've got a good product, people like to, well, it kind of goes both ways. People like to brag about, you know, this wonderful thing that they've found, But we sort of had to be careful at some point because, you know, there's always the scarcity model in your advertising, or often in your advertising. And if people get nervous that you're going to sell out, they're not going to share with their friends how they can get it too. So we sort of had to fight with that balance. But it's very important, you know, that people hear from their friends that they trust, that they can support you as well.
So I'm assuming that the relationship with a processor is very important when you're doing direct-to-consumer sales. Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship that you had with, did you have one processor, more than one processor, and how did they, what did they do for you?
Oh, you are absolutely right, Erin. We tried several, and I've got to say, for anyone who is, you know, thinking that this is going to be a super easy way to make a few extra bucks on your farm, the processor was one of the reasons that we are no longer doing direct-to-customer marketing at the moment. It was probably the most stressful part of the whole business. So, like I said, we tried a few. There were two that we liked, and in the end, we only were using one, who could process all of our animals, and they would have picked them up for us. But in the end, you know, we delivered to them and they delivered the frozen, vacuum sealed, labeled product back to us, which was a huge benefit. It was, that was definitely one of the bottlenecks is actually in handling the finished product in the end. So having a processor that can do all that is a huge weight off. Also, at the scale that we were, you know, we were booking our appointments, you know, 6 to 9 months out, which is actually shorter than a lot of people do with small processors. But we also had the flexibility to change it from sort of with week's notice often, because they knew that the bulk numbers that we were going to be passing through their facility. So that really helped. In the end, what made things run more smoothly was sending larger batches of one species at a time. So, you know, we'd send pigs this week, and the next week we'd send lambs, and the next week it would be cattle, rather than trying to have fresh product of all three species, you know, every week or every few weeks. That was a huge improvement in terms of getting what we wanted in the end. And the other really big important thing for us, at least, was access to a cold storage facility, because we started out on a small land base and we were 100% renting all of our lands, barns, everything. We were really lucky to have access to cold storage, where the butcher would deliver pallets of meat directly and I'd go and pull from there to fulfill orders. It's a bigger part of the whole business than you'd imagine, is the actual order fulfillment. And another big challenge with the processing is just the price of processing. It really takes a chunk out of what you're charging your customer in the end. But of course, you get what you pay for. So having a good processor, even if they are expensive, can really be worth it in the end.
So switching over to technology, like what technology did you use to assist with sales? Are there any suggested platforms or advice there for producers looking to get into direct-to-consumer sales?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, email is super important, and that's where we started. It was 100% email-based. You know, I had, you know, people would write down their email address and I'd send them a weekly or a bi-weekly newsletter. And I really can't stress enough how important that is. You can, you know, it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be a blog, but, you know, a paragraph about what happened at the farm that week that is going to help them connect to you and to the farm is super important. So that email list, newsletter, really important. Social media, of course, also super important, because the more often that they see your name and have a positive interaction with your farm, the more connected they're going to be to you. And then just from a purely logistical standpoint, we use a company called Local Line. They're actually based in Kitchener, I believe. And they specialize in direct-to-consumer sales for farmers. And they have all sorts of different capabilities in their platform for, you know, if it's for vegetables, if it's for bulk orders. They also, they started doing subscriptions this year, or if it's meat by the pound. So they were, we've been working, or we worked with them for a couple of years before we moved, and it was quite the game changer. I had used Square before, which is quite good, but you know, if you're, if you want to be accurate in your pricing, they're, you know, trying to sell like t-shirts and things like that. So Localine is great. There are other ones out there. There's Grayscart and some bigger American models that I, you know, at a bigger scale, I think those are fantastic also. But yeah, can't say enough good stuff about Localine, really.
That's amazing. So talk to us a little bit more about marketing. So when it comes to, you know, branding, when it comes to pricing, you know, what did you learn along the way about promoting your product and how to position it in the marketplace?
Yeah, this one is really interesting, and it's become a bit of a, you know, a side passion of mine. Although, you know, I didn't go to business school. I studied genetics. This was all new to me to begin with. There are some great podcasts out there that I really can't recommend enough, and some really good social media accounts for marketing for farmers specifically. And it's interesting. It does take some thought before you start. You really need to think about what you want to be telling your customers and who those customers are. Like, you sort of need to be tailoring your message to who you think is going to buy your product, and doing a bit of market research can't hurt. I have no problem admitting that. I'm not saying that we made a mistake necessarily, but from the very beginning of our marketing journey, farming journey, we were very strong in our use of not just buzzwords, but, you know, ethos and talking about why we do what we do. So, you know, those were things like 100% grass-fed, high welfare, things like that, and single source. Like, our slogan was born and grazed in Niagara on the Lake. So we only sold animals that we raised ourselves on the farm, more or less from birth. When we did the cattle, it was, you know, they came from another farm and we raised them from weaning to slaughter. But if you change your practices several years down the line, you're going to have to explain that to your customer too. So just think about that when you're getting started. Is this how you're going to be doing things for the foreseeable future? How flexible are you going to be? So, of course, the big buzzwords that catch people's attention, you know, back when we started, it was all about sustainability. And then, you know, it started moved into the regenerative agriculture, grass-fed, local, high welfare. Those are all the big words, you know, your hashtags that you can be talking about. It's what people want to see, I think, when they're looking for this type of product. It's not, you know, it's not your typical Costco, Walmart shopper who's, you know, actively seeking out local lamb specifically. Social media, like I said, super important just for getting out there and getting in people's faces, finding new people, shareable content, that kind of thing. Facebook groups, like local Facebook groups specifically, like for your town or whatever you think your delivery region is going to be, they often have, you know, a schedule of when you can share about businesses, or, you know, you can just, it doesn't have to be a specifically a marketing post, but something, you know, about the farm, that, you know, just a pretty picture, or, oh, look what lambs are being born this week, that kind of thing. Just to get your name in front of more people. And then if you have the opportunity, partnerships with other local retailers or other farms can be super helpful. Like I said, in the end, we were selling lamb, pork, beef, and eggs, which is a lot for two people. So if you can partner with someone who's already raising another high quality product that has a similar background or ethos to you, you're really going to be sharing the load in terms of marketing, which, I mean, you can double your customer base essentially if you can partner up with somebody else who's already got an existing customer base.
So looking back, any lessons learned?
Oof, yes, absolutely. you know, I mean, you can't always foresight or hindsight's 2020, and you can't foresee what changes are going to come, you know, 5-10 years down the line. So having started out, we started out where we knew our customers were, which was in Niagara-on-the-Lake, which if you're in Ontario, I'm sure you all know Niagara is not a cheap place. So we had the customer base who could afford our product, but we couldn't afford to be there in the end. We outgrew our physical space and we couldn't afford to buy there. And so that sort of was a difficult thing for us to come to terms with, I suppose. But even just, you know, whatever space you have, you're going to outgrow it. Just whatever you plan for, you know, give yourself 50% more barn space, more, you know, storage space, more everything, because it's a lot easier to grow into something than it is to, you know, add on when you're in the thick of things. And, you know, plan for burnout, because that was a real thing for us. Selling as much meat as we did in the end was, it was more than a full-time job for two people. It was probably more than a full-time job for three people. So, you know, plan for breaks, plan for the capability to hire someone on when you need to. Yeah, I really can't stress that enough. If you're doing well, you're going to probably burn out unless you have help with everything, really, even just for, you know, sick days.
Well, we know the next chapter of this story is that you moved east, but if you were still in that Niagara-on-the-Lake region, or if somebody was looking at that market opportunity, what do you think the potential is? You know, would there have been growth potential for your business? Were there opportunities? You know, is there a nice market there?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. No. And people are still bugging me. Are you going to be shipping lamb from out east? Where can we get lamb? And that is something that we're working on. But the cold chain issue is a real challenge. And I mean, there's plenty of lamb to be had in Ontario. So I'm, trying to spread the love. But it is a challenge for sure. It takes a bit of work, but there's definitely the demand, like without question. In the end, we were direct marketing. We had up to 175 ewes in the end. From a quite prolific flock. And I'd say we were direct marketing well over 200 lambs a year. So it's I wouldn't discourage anyone from giving it a try, especially if you already have, you know, a bit of a relationship with the processor. Certainly reach out if you can find another farm that's maybe they're just selling beef or they're selling pork or whatever, get in there with them, like give it a try. You don't have to start from scratch necessarily, just to, you know, to see if it's going to work for you.
And does it pencil out? Because I know that would be the next question. Mm-hmm. If I were looking at this market, how does it pencil out?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the wonderful thing about lamb is that it's already a high-end product. And like I said, the butchering fees, especially on lamb, are quite high because it is a smaller animal. So, you know, it's going to depend a bit on your breeds and on, you know, how large a lamb you are raising, but it definitely makes sense. So, you know, if you know, on average, let's say someone makes $200 selling a lamb live through the stockyard, you can definitely double that, I would say, by selling it direct. It just, you have to consider how you're going to sell it, because, you know, there is the infrastructure, there's the time, and the time to actually get it to the customer. So, you know, some people will have it, you know, they'll deliver it to the butcher, and the butcher takes care of the ordering, and the customer picks it up at the butcher and pays the butcher. That's super easy. Maybe you're not going to get quite the markup there as if you were to do all the customer service yourself, but that is definitely a challenge. And if that's not your strong suit, if you can't deal with people and deal with the education, maybe that's not the right choice for you, because, you know, if you're selling individual cuts or if you're selling a whole lamb, there's definitely going to be an education curve for the customer, for you, for the processor. And it's a challenge, but it can be worthwhile when you have an existing relationship with someone. And, you know, you have to teach that person, but once they know, that, you know, they'll stick with you as long as, you know, they're happy with the product.
So here's a question. Now that we're on the other side of the pandemic, can you speak to us about how the pandemic impacted your business?
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting time for everyone, no doubt. We were really lucky in that we had started our delivery route, you know, in addition to the farmers markets, the year before the pandemic started. So when the farmers markets closed, we already had that email list and we had a delivery route and we just sort of ramped everything up. So, I mean, it's hard to sort of, or maybe it feels wrong to say it was a really good thing for us. Of course, there was the SIBA loan, which also helped us to do some expanding at the time. And then, you know, with more people cooking from home, there was just increased demand. So, yeah, we had the time freed up from farmers markets. We could do more deliveries. And we really took advantage of that. And actually, we never went back to farmers markets after that. Because, you know, when you're doing deliveries, it's a guaranteed sale. You don't go out unless you've got the sale. And the weather is not not so much of a factor. And the time of year is not so much of a factor. Because people are happy to eat lamb year round.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So now we're on to the part of the story where you move east. And and so we're really curious about that decision to move to Nova Scotia. And tell us about how your business model has changed. Are you still selling products direct to consumer or have you changed your farm model completely?
Yeah, it's been quite the change. We never planned to move. I mean, we looked a little bit outside of Ontario, like in BC, because that's where my family's from, when we were looking for farms. And, you know, Facebook being what it is, we just saw the ad for the perfect farm. And, you know, it was the right time and not necessarily the right place, but it was the right farm for us. So we sort of jumped on it. It was at a moment of burnout in terms of marketing when we saw this farm for sale, and we just jumped on it. And it's been a huge change. When we moved, we took the sheep and we took some cattle with us. So we went from our flock of about 170 ewes, and now we're up to 575 in a 12-month period. Wow. So a bit of a change. We're going all in on the sheep. We've got a handful of Speckle Park cattle, too, just to eat those silage bales that the sheep can't have. And we're really focusing on doing the farming as well as we can, which feels really nice. But is a whole new learning curve, of course, and a pretty different lifestyle, which has been nice. It's been we haven't done any direct marketing, essentially, aside from a couple of steers this year, which has been a nice break. But I can also, you know, I can see that coming back in a certain way. And like I said, we still have demand in Ontario. And so I need to do a little more research, but the cold chain is our big challenge right now in shipping. So, you know, right now we have shearing coming up, and so we're going to be focusing a bit more on non-perishable marketing, I'd say, because of course we didn't talk about wool at all, but wool is another thing that you can be direct marketing to customers.
So tell us, you use the word cold chain. Can you just explain that a little bit?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So that when an animal is processed, you know, it has to be maintained at a certain temperature from the time it is killed to the time that basically it's in the customer's fridge. So one of the challenges and, you know, areas that is maybe a bit gray is that transport from the abattoir to the farm and from the farm to the customer. And, you know, a lot of people are, you know, using coolers or insulating the back of their truck, which I've never had a problem with, and I've never heard of anyone having a problem with locally. But when you're crossing provincial lines, of course, things get a bit different. It also, you know, you have to have federal inspection, which isn't an issue for us, but just getting product from, for example, Nova Scotia to Ontario. I'm sure we've all seen those ads and those amazing farms down in the States where they're shipping, you know, overnight to all 50 states. That simply is not a reality in Canada. And, you know, you can ask any shipping company and they'll give you a different reason. You know, there's not enough Canadians. It's too big a country, blah, blah, blah. So we've looked into various options, you know, even including I've been trying to get quotes to have a pallet of lamb delivered, you know, picked up from an abattoir and sent to another facility in Ontario where it could then be distributed. But I so far have not had luck with that. So that is that's definitely something to work on. but you know, if they can ship lobsters and whatnot, there's no reason that we can't be shipping lamb, you know, from where it is to where it wants to go.
Absolutely.
So we could probably do a podcast on just moving a farm in general. Oh my. But I have a question. How many trucks does it take to move a sheep farm?
Oh, goodness. Well, we took two flatbed loads, like two full 43-foot loads of tractors and hay equipment and all that. Then it was one U-Haul truck of personal equipment and a livestock trailer full of other stuff and dog food and all that jazz and frozen meat. And then it was two 43-foot livestock trucks to get all the sheep and cattle here and the six guardian dogs. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
That is a caravan.
Yeah, that could have been a reality TV show.
It absolutely could have been. It was, I think, in the end, it took 3 weeks to get everyone from one place to the other because Martin came ahead of me with, first we sent one load of equipment so it would get here before Martin did. Then Martin drove. And then I was home for another 2 weeks, loaded the last of the animals, loaded the last of the equipment after the animals had gone. And then I got in the livestock trailer and drove. It was an adventure.
Sounds like it.
But you can do it. Anyone can do it.
Well, thank you, Juliet, for joining us on Flock Talk and certainly talking about all things marketing and sharing your experience. And I know we certainly wish you all the best on your venture out east.
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's nice to still feel like a little bit of the Ontario sheep community.
That's fantastic. Well, you're always part of the Ontario sheep community in our hearts. And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Join us next Wednesday for our education-themed interview with Kelly Daynard with Farm and Food Care Ontario. Hey, Tom, what have you been working on lately?
So, Aaron, one of the things OSF and myself have been working on the last couple of weeks has been conducting a review of the websites, both OSF commodity website as well as the consumer website. The consumer website's a little bit more intricate because we run various applications or third-party apps on the website, such as Google Translate and a couple of others for the recipe search. This is done to ensure that the site is working and the updates are needed and to avoid any problems on the front end. This is now complete and ready to go for 2024. The OSF staff will be continuing to update new recipes with a focus on ethnic as well as easy weeknight meals. While running the various updates, OSF staff also took the time to update some new recipes, which you'll find on the website. Lamb tacos, lamb shawarma, lamb meatloaf, as well as mince and tatties. There's also new sauces and marinades, as well as some new resource pages, such as grilling tips and techniques, pressure cooking times, as well as tips for smoking lamb. OSF will continue to be looking into this, as well as creating new recipes into 2024 and beyond, as well as featuring our spring-summer barbecue campaign.
Really cool. And I tried the Lamb Wellington over the holidays, and it was amazing. And that website is lambrecipes.ca.
So, Aaron, can you tell me a little bit about some other things going on at OSF?
Well, in advocacy, our top priority is to work with our partners in the Ontario Agricultural Sustainability Coalition, which are grain farmers, beef farmers, fruit and vegetable growers, Ontario pork, and Ontario veal farmers, to increase the province's investment in the risk management program. Sheep farmers have a static portion of the existing funding envelope, and in 2023, enrollment in RMP by sheep farmers increased by 18%. The total pounds of lamb production enrolled in the program has grown from 4.5 million in 2020 to over 8 million enrolled in 2023. Our organization is very concerned with ongoing participation in this very valuable program if payment prorations continue to worsen. OSF is working with our OASC partners to increase the provincial government contribution to the risk management program by an additional $100 million.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe through your podcast app to receive alerts for future episodes, and please share our podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, and at Ontario Sheep on X, formerly Twitter. And visit our website at ontariosheep.org.